Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. You're on the Owl's Nest here, where we talk about all things related to Harford Community College. I'm your host, Matt Terry, and joining me today, I have Professor Lisa Tittle from the Arts and Humanities Department. Lisa, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Now, I think this is the first time I've had you on the Owl's Nest, and I just want to congratulate you because you were also nominated to the Faculty Spotlight Committee. Congratulations on that nomination.
Oh, thank you very much. It was quite an honor to be nominated.
So just give me a little bit of background about you. How long have you been with the college?
I've been with the college for about 25 years. I started as an adjunct professor back in the 90s. And then I came full-time in 2001. Primarily, my job is teaching transitional English reading and writing courses that help students get to college-level reading and writing skills so that they're successful and can reach their educational goals in college-level classes. But I also teach English composition and African-American literature courses.
Now, Lisa, the whole premise of being able to read is crucial and essential for everyone across multiple job platforms to be able to be an effective communicator, because if you're not that, there are so many jobs in so many different aspects, not just the arts and humanities, where if you're not an effective communicator, you could run into some barriers and into some walls. So talk to me a little bit about, and it probably goes without saying, but it is really an important thing to have literacy skills in today's world, isn't it?
Oh, yes. It's really more important than ever, not just in an educational setting. Of course, that is very important to be able to, you know, read an article or read your textbook or assign readings related to the topics in your courses. But also, if you're buying a house, you need to be able to understand the paperwork related to your mortgage.
Right.
Or if you're purchasing a car, you need to understand the different aspects of the loan. If you are going on a trip and you need travel insurance, you know, there's all different types of ways for everyday living. Even, you know, understanding the instruction manual for your new microwave, for example, or for the Bluetooth in your car. You know, all ways that we really have to be able to understand and be able to disseminate information. And particularly now that we have an abundance of information that is inaccurate or misleading or even perhaps just outright false.
Right.
We need to be able to disseminate that information and make critical decisions about what is true, what is accurate, and how we're going to respond to that information based on its accuracy.
Couldn't agree more with you. I've been reading articles where the majority of people have gotten a lot of their information from places like social media and other types of influencer sites like YouTube. And people are not necessarily saying they're listening less to news and radio, but they're taking a lot of what they hear in social media at face value. So I couldn't agree more with you that, you know, being able to be literate, to be able to understand, I get a positive drive from you where you're passionate about what you do. I had the fortune of speaking with you before the interview, and you really are behind your students 175, let's say 200%. So
yeah.
What's some of the typical course objectives that you hold your students to? What can they expect coming into your classroom on a semesterly basis?
Mm-hmm. The biggest part is we're working on making them better writers. And to do that, we have to be able to read information, make decisions about the accuracy of information, and how we're going to respond to the written word to create our own written words. And that takes a lot of critical thinking,
yeah,
a lot of decision making. You have to be able to understand the vocabulary of what you're reading. And you also have to be able to understand how you feel about a particular topic. And how can you communicate that clearly in writing in a rational way? And how can you find sources that are credible, reliable, valid, and current to support your ideas. So I often say, and it's kind of a joke, but I really mean it, that, you know, nobody really cares what you have to say, but they do care how you support it.
Right.
And then once you have great support for what you have to say, then what you say has value and becomes important in of itself. But the opinion by itself or the thought by itself doesn't have much value unless you can really support it. So we work diligently about getting students to think about what they're writing, plan it out effectively, and so that when they have that written piece, it communicates something clearly to the reader. That's very important in higher ed.
So, Lisa, talk to me a little bit about the job outlook for the arts and humanities, particularly in English. What are some, because I get a lot of students that ask me, hey, I have this piece of paper. What do you think I should do next? Well, that's a very, very good question. Talk to me, because it's very relevant in these times, in this age of COVID that we still live in. Let's talk about a focus in the majors in the humanities and the job outlook. What are we looking at for jobs for students that have that piece of paper now and they're looking for employment in the humanities?
Sure. Well, the humanities is very broad.
Oh, yeah.
And at Hartford Community College, we offer four degrees in the areas of humanities: English, history, philosophy, and communication. But other colleges, the humanities might be a little bit broader, so include art history or art, music, etc. But at Hartford, the humanities is limited to those four areas. And so often students think, well, you know, oh great, now I'm going to be a teacher. Now, in my world, being a teacher is the most fantastic, wonderful, fabulous thing that anybody could ever do.
But sure.
I understand that not everybody shares my zeal for teaching. So you can also be an editor or a technical writer. We actually need people to generate reports and instruction manuals and put analytical data into written form and summaries. Very big push for that, actually. You can be a lawyer, particularly if you have a background in philosophy. Lots of philosophy majors end up studying law. There's public relations and marketing for communication majors and English majors. There's social work and also sign language or world language interpreters. There's a great need for bilingual people.
Wow.
And, you know, and we're seeing it now with all the press conferences with our politicians, the intense need for sign language interpreters. So those are just a few. Web content analysts, lots of jobs in the cyber world where we need a background in humanities. We need people who can read and write and think critically and communicate effectively in the job market. Those are very marketable skills.
Well, it sounds like the sky can be the limit if you have a degree with arts and humanities. So many different choices, so many different places to go. Sometimes it gets overwhelming. What kind of advice do you give to students when they're trying to narrow down, you know, to that laser focus? Like, what do you recommend that they do? How do they kind of, instead of just, you know, throwing resumes at a wall, what do you recommend that students with a degree in arts and humanities, what do you recommend that they do to try to narrow down that big, broad swath?
Sure. Well, first, I would say follow your heart, because there's nothing worse than having a job that you don't enjoy.
Sure.
You're going to spend 8 hours or more a day in that environment. And so you need to find something that you like to do. Don't just think about how much money you're going to make. You know, wealth, I imagine, I don't know, I don't have personal experience, but, you know, wealth seems
me neither.
To be a wonderful environment. But that is not the only thing that makes you happy. So, you know, figure out the thing that you really like to do. Some people really like making things correct. So I would say be an editor, you know, look into editing. And then I would talk to people who are in those areas. Find a mentor or, you know, ask around, find out people who are working in those fields, send them an email or give them a call and say, you know, hey, I'm thinking about working in this area. Could you just tell me about your job? What do you think? most people in their professions who like their work love to talk about it and like to get other people involved. I know that's a risk, but it's definitely one worth taking, and there's payoff 90% of the time. You know, very rarely is someone going to, you know, slam the phone in your ear or, you know, not respond to an email if you have a true interest in what they're doing. And my third piece of advice would be, you know, don't be afraid to take a crappy job. We often want to enter into the workforce in our dream job. It took me 9 or 10 years to find my dream job. I thought I had my dream job. And then when I moved to Hartford Community College, I realized, oh, yeah, this is my dream job. But that job that I had previously, I worked in the public school system. It was not a crappy job. I loved it. But I learned so much about what I truly wanted and about the field in which that I worked. And I grew in experience from my colleagues at that time. So don't be afraid to work in an environment that is not exactly what you want, because I bet that you'll glean,
right,
you know, a lot from it that you can write, put on your resume, put in your heart, add to your list of experiences, and use that to propel you forward.
And intern,
yes.
Anywhere,
yes,
that you,
right,
can.
Anywhere, yes.
That's one of my biggest advice to any of the students who ever ask me anything at any time where to begin is I say intern early and intern often. Mm-hmm. Where are some places that you would recommend an English and or an arts and humanities student should intern?
Well, an educational setting is always a good place to start.
Sure.
Museums are a great place to start. They often have lots of volunteer opportunities at museums.
Okay.
And you can get a wide breadth of experience from working in different types of museums and historical societies, things of that nature. I would also look at .gov websites and see if certain offices that you have interest in might need help. They might be working on a project or, trying to get a grant, and so they need some additional help. So those are, off the top of my head, those are a couple places I would say students can look.
If I have any professor in the English arts, I wish it would be you. You're so enthusiastic. You definitely love what you do. And while I have you here for a little while longer, so Professor Tittle, I just wanted to get a few ideas of yours, because I've yet to ask some of our teachers on the Owl's Nest this. I wanted to get some perspective as far as the online learning scenario, because that's the world we're living in now. We're still in the coronavirus grasp, and we're still practicing this social distancing to be safe than sorry. And, you know, it definitely modifies the classroom a good bit. And it can be especially tricky when you have a very hands-on class. How have you and your department been handling the online learning models?
Well, fortunately, we have several professors who have been teaching online for many years.
Okay, good.
So those of us who are novices have been able to tap into the expertise of our colleagues, and that's been absolutely wonderful. The adaptation has been challenging, because now I feel that I have to take everything that I would say and do and find a way for students to interact, you know, with that in an electronic format. So many of us are providing video. I record my lectures along with the PowerPoint so that students can get the information that way, as opposed to doing a lot of reading. I also have virtual office hours where students can pop in and ask questions, or we can go over, get some one-on-one feedback about an assignment that's due in the next couple of days.
Okay.
Many teachers are also doing remote learning, where they actually meet with students for the hour and 20 minutes, and everybody, comes on at once, and they're able to have the lecture, and the students ask questions, or even do a group activity. So we're working diligently to try to mimic that one-on-one as best we can, although, of course, it will never be the same as a face-to-face environment. But we're working very hard to incorporate as many interactive possibilities for students to meet the course objectives.
It sounds amazing, Professor Tittle. I can't imagine some of the challenges, you know, not being able to have that one-on-one with the students, but it sounds like everyone that I've talked to, they're making the best of the situation, and so are you. And on the note of students and assignments, what are some of the assignments that your students are doing this semester that you're particularly stoked about?
Mm-hmm. Well, this semester has been very exciting because, again, I have a linked class. So my class, my English 101 class, is linked to a psychology course. So all the students in my 101 are also taking the same psychology course. And so all of the writing assignments that they do for me are based on the content from their psychology class. So when we wrote our first essay, I have the syllabus for the psychology course, and I'm able to look at the topics of the chapter and read what's happening in those first few weeks and have them write and respond to, let's say, it might be about personality disorders or to describe different careers in psychology and how one might use those careers when facing a pandemic. They just finished writing a summary response based on a journal article that they were given in psychology class. And they have a group presentation coming up, and they're going to use the topic of that group presentation to write their research papers. So it's been a lot of fun for me and a great exercise in my brain. I appreciate, you know, being able to try new things in the classroom. And the students have fewer writing assignments. So what they write for me can also be used in psychology class. And what they have in psychology class can also be used in my class. So they're actually writing two fewer papers than if they had taken a solitary psychology class and a solitary English 1 class that were not linked. And so far, the feedback, students seem to enjoy that. And we're going to try it again in the spring with a anthropology course. I won't be teaching that one. Another professor will. So we're hoping that we can provide more linked courses for students and then increase retention and completion of that class, because, you know, we've got two courses that are at stake. And then again, the fewer assignments, so hopefully students won't be as stressed trying to get all the work done for both classes.
Well, it sounds like if anyone will help those students along and alleviate a lot of that stress, it's going to be Lisa Tittle. That's exactly who I've had here with me. See, I'm the king of closers here at WHFC.
Yeah, I see that.
Thank you. Thank you. Professor Lisa Tittle from the English Department, Arts and Humanities here at Harford Community College. Lisa, thank you for coming on, and I hope to have you back on to the Owl's Nest again very soon.
Yes, I would look forward to that. Thank you so much.
You've been on The Owl's Nest. I'm your host, Matt Terry. So sorry, but it's time for me to scoot. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and above all, stay curious.